You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Okay, we are on the record now. KCR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. This is another day of jury selection in small groups. The defendant is here present, represented by his attorney, Mr. Pryor. The state and prosecutors are here present as well. Apologies for the late start, counsel. We had a number of jurors that were late getting in. We have 14 of the 16. One we haven't heard word from, another is still apparently half an hour out, so we're going to proceed without waiting for that particular juror. The jurors that will not be appearing or have failed to appear, I'll read that off in a moment once it's been confirmed. The issue we can take up before we bring the 14 in that are here, a issue brought up this morning to the court regarding access the state has to NCIs that are exclusively in the possession and control of the state. The state's, as I understand it, made an agreement and did, in this case, as we started, to provide that information for review of the defense as it relates to check of criminal histories of prospective jurors. My understanding is the state has agreed that any information they intend to bring up on NCIC criminal history is going to be provided in advance to the defense prior to the groups coming in, the 16 groups of four Dyer. And maybe I can just get a confirmation of my understanding on that issue from one of the prosecutors. Mr. Wood.
That is accurate, Your Honor. And just for the record, to be fully accurate, the state is allowed to share that information and allow Mr. Pryor to review those. We are not allowed to turn copies of it over to anyone outside of our office, but we will, anytime there is a criminal history, share that information with the defense.
All right, Mr. Pryor, is that arrangement acceptable to the defense?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, counsel, for acknowledging that issue. The one other issue I will bring up briefly with counsel is on the juror affirmations of the jurors that have appeared this morning. One of them made some sort of an explanation that I'm not particularly concerned about being asked about the case at work, but not talking about it. That would be juror 791. Does the state have any concern or think we need to address that comment in the affirmation?
No, Your Honor, the state did read over that comment. I think that that wouldn't be in violation of the court's order. It sounds like she tried to comply with what this court ordered her to do.
Okay, thank you. Any concern from the defense as to juror 791?
Judge, I don't know the level of the discussion that's referenced. I may not share the court's opinion in that regard. My concern is that I don't know what, again, how much of a discussion took place. It seems unclear. There obviously was an acknowledgement and there was some discussion. I'd like to know the level of that discussion. What I am concerned about is whether there's been a change in the form of opinion or not. If there were facts discussed, issues discussed, feelings of co-workers discussed, and that sort of engagement took place, you can't unring the bell. And I have a concern about that. So I would like the court to allow some further inquiry into that regard if that particular juror is going to be here.
Okay. Well, when that comes up, Mr. Pryor, they did state there was a discussion. They said they kept the discussion to a minimum. So I think that is an appropriate line of inquiry on Board Dyer. If you have further questions about that discussion and this juror's following of the affirmation, I'll permit that. Likewise, the state's permitted to inquire on that issue also. The jurors, now that we've confirmed, are not going to be appearing as part of this group would be jurors number 823 and jurors number 1112. So The remaining 14 jurors from this group are here. We will proceed then with bringing those jurors in to continue with our voir dire examination of them. Is there anything else the state needs to address before the jurors are brought in?
And Your Honor, just to be clear, and I may have missed it, is the court going to excuse those jurors, or are we bringing them in later?
Well, we've got the one group today, so at least the one juror that's on their way is going to be instructed to return likely tomorrow morning. The other juror we haven't heard from, so I'm not sure.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that we kept them in the pool if they may still be coming back.
Okay. I'll confirm who's who and what happened and whether we get any word from the other missing juror. And when we conclude this group today, I'll let counsel know if and when these particular jurors are going to return for further voir dire. Beyond that, anything else from the state before the jury's brought in?
Nothing further. Thank you, Your Honor.
Nothing, Judge.
Okay. Ms. Bailiff, if you'd please have the jurors brought in then.
Yes, Your Honor. Counsel, here you are.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, good morning, everyone. We're on the record on case CR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. I'll note that the defendant is here present, represented by his attorney. The state's present as well, represented by the prosecution. Before we begin the jury selection process here this morning, I'll first inquire, beginning with the state, is there any objection to the manner in which the jury panel has been recalled and seated today?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
From the defense.
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel. At this time then, I will note on the record, we had 16 jurors summoned to appear today. Juror number 1112 has failed to appear, and juror number 823, for some reason, was running substantially late and is going to be instructed to return for another group, likely tomorrow. The remaining jurors have all arrived and reported, and thank you for coming today. Let's next have a roll call by the clerk, if we could, to confirm who's here. And when your name's called, you can please raise your red number so that we can confirm where you're seated also.
I've asked you to please answer audibly when I call your juror number. Juror 752?
Yes.
Juror 791?
Yes.
Juror 792?
Yes.
Juror 899?
Yes.
Juror 909?
Yes.
Juror 922?
Here.
Juror 923? Juror 924?
Yes.
Juror 937?
Here.
Juror 951?
Yes.
Juror 1004?
Here.
Juror 1032?
Here.
Juror 1048?
Yes.
Juror 1057?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for returning this morning. You've been recalled here as prospective jurors in the case now before us. I'll reintroduce my court staff and myself again. I'm Stephen W. Boyce, the district judge of Fremont County, Idaho. I'm in charge of this trial in the courtroom here today. Our court clerk assisting this morning is Shannon Holstein, and she's keeping minutes of these proceedings and will administer oaths to you as jurors. The marshals are here also assisting maintaining courtroom order. Deputies Holmes, Bache, and Ravello are here, as well as the court reporter, Mary Fox, who's taking a stenographic record of everything said during the trial proceedings. Also, my staff attorneys, Courtney Stallings, seated to the right, and she assists me with legal research and issues that arise during the case. You are all qualified to serve as jurors of this court, and each of you filled out a questionnaire that's now been reviewed by the court and the attorneys, and it was determined you would be recalled here for further questioning today. What we're doing in the trial at this stage is to select 18 jurors, which will be 12 jurors with six alternates from among you. At this time then, to assist you in understanding and participating in the jury selection process, I'll reintroduce you to the parties and their lawyers and summarize what the case is about. Before I do that, I will note with that juror that failed to appear, The court will issue an order to show cause and determine whether or not that juror should be subject to a fine and or jail for failing to appear pursuant to provisions of Idaho Code, Title VII and Title II. At this time then, to introduce the parties, beginning with the state, I'll sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. Each of you would stand as I mention your name. In this case, the state is represented by Lindsay Blake, who's the Fremont County, Idaho prosecutor, Rob Wood, Madison County, Idaho prosecutor. Ingrid Beatty is a specially appointed prosecutor, and Rocky Whitson, a deputy prosecutor also. The defendant in this case, Chad Guy Daybell, is represented by his attorney, John Pryor.
Good morning, ladies.
This case is a criminal matter, meaning the defendant's charged by the state of Idaho with violations of the law. I previously read to you, when you filled out your questionnaire, the amended indictment, and with regard to the defendant, then the state of Idaho has alleged that Chad Guy Daybell committed the following crimes, as alleged in that amended indictment. Count one, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count two, first degree murder. Count three, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count four, first degree murder. Count five, conspiracy to commit first degree murder. Count six, first degree murder. Count seven, insurance fraud. Count nine, insurance fraud. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to the charges. Please remember, that is simply a description of charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. I'll next discuss your duty as jurors. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I will later give you to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying those instructions as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is, what the law should be, or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including this jury selection process, you're instructed that you are not to discuss the case among yourselves or with anyone else, including any use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time then, I'm going to ask our clerk to administer an oath to the entire jury panel for this voir dire examination. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you would please rise at this time and raise your right hands.
You solemnly swear or affirm that you will truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by the court or counsel, such upon your qualifications to sit as a trial juror and cause now on trial, so help you God.
Thank you. Please be seated. I'll note on the record, the court observed that all the jury panel was placed under oath for this proceeding. At this time, I'm going to ask another question regarding this impaneling. Will the attorneys stipulate, beginning with the state, that the jurors now have been properly called and impaneled? Does the state so stipulate?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Will the defense agree?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Pryor. The jurors have also completed their juror affirmations this morning, and the court appreciates you following the court's admonishing instructions. At this time, I'll discuss now the nature and purpose of this voir dire. This is the part of the jury selection process where you will be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of the common law. In Old French, it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain 12 persons who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand this questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your personal affairs, but only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you need to answer a question, please raise your red card so we know who on the record is speaking. And when you're called upon to speak, because we are making a record, please communicate verbally your responses, such as answering yes or no, instead of nodding your head or shaking your head, and try to avoid speaking at the same time as any attorney questioning you or the court so that the record is clear for our court reporter. If you have an answer to any question that you feel is too personal and embarrassing to you to answer publicly, please let me know and we can discuss that in a more private setting. I will acknowledge here that we are live streaming this proceeding. However, jurors are not part of that broadcast. However, your verbal responses are being broadcast on that. You're just not being shown on any video. Similarly, if you think you have an answer to a question that may prejudice other jurors, for information you may know about the case, please refrain from saying anything about the facts of the case, and we'll discuss that outside of the presence of your fellow jurors as well. At some point, we will discuss with each of you individually as needed your exposure to any pretrial publicity in this case or facts of the case. I will now read you a special instruction in this case, which is as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Vallow Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes your special instruction. At this time, I'll also ask that the attorneys be mindful to not repeat questions already asked by the court or other counsel. The attorneys do have the right, however, to direct any follow-up questions to a juror regarding that juror's response to previous questions. The jury should be aware that during and following the voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has challenges for cause, which means that each side can ask a juror be excused for some specific reason. In addition, each side has peremptory challenges, meaning they will be able to exercise challenges without giving a reason for the dismissal. If you're excused by either side, please don't feel offended or feel that your honesty or integrity has been questioned. It has not. I'll now begin the court's portion of the voir dire process, after which the attorneys for both parties will be given an opportunity to make their own inquiries. When I'm addressing questions with the jurors, please pay attention to those questions because you may be called to ask or answer those same questions later. The first general question I'll ask to all of you as a group is regarding your questionnaire. Are the answers given by each of you in the juror information and in your juror questionnaire you filled out last week still true and accurate? If those answers are still true and accurate, please raise your red card at this time. All right, every juror indicated their answers are still true and accurate. The next issue the court wants to discuss is the time commitment required for this case. If you're required to serve as a juror in this case, it will be for a period of approximately 8 to 10 weeks. Would that period of time create a serious hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation so as to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case? If you believe that it would be a hardship for you to serve, please raise your red card at this time. Okay, we have a number of those. If you'll please hold those up for a moment, I'm going to list those out, let counsel do the same. All right, thank you. We'll take up these hardship concerns first with the group. We'll start with juror number 792. So give me a moment, I'll look at your questionnaire. And during this phase, I may have the counsel inquire as well on specific hardship questions during the court's portion of the voir dire here. So juror number 792. You got a couple of personal issues you brought up there. In addition, employment concerns. Can you explain what you think would occur if you were required to sit as a juror in this case for that length of time?
I was out of work for about 10 months, started a new job about 5 weeks ago, so just getting my foot in.
Is that new job a full-time employment?
Yes.
Have you discussed with your employer the possibility that you would be required to serve on this jury?
Yes.
And what did they indicate would be the status of your job if you were gone that long?
Maintain the job, no pay.
Okay, so you wouldn't lose your job, but you would not be paid for the term you were gone?
That's my understanding.
Any follow-up for Dyer from the state?
No, Your Honor, the state also had a note on the hardship to follow up. I think given that additional information that he would receive no pay during his service here, the state would make a motion to remove him for cause based on hardship.
The defense is going to stipulate to release him for cause, judge, in this situation.
Okay. Well, given your employment situation with that new job, just coming off a term of unemployment, the court finds that would likely create a serious financial hardship for you. Given the length of this trial. So for that reason, juror 792, I will sustain the for cause challenge based on a hardship. So thank you for coming in and filling out your questionnaire. I'll allow you to be excused. You can please return that questionnaire to the bailiff on your way out. Let's next talk to juror 899. Did you raise your card, please? Did you raise your card about a hardship also?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I note in your questionnaire, you didn't mention something on that. Can you explain to the court what the hardship would be?
Yes, my husband's job is ending in May, which means that I will be making up more than 50% of our income, and I am afraid of losing our home, not being able to pay our mortgage until my husband can find another job.
When in May would that be occurring, do you know?
He said that towards the end of May. I'm not entirely sure.
If that did happen and you were here doing jury duty still through that time period, do you believe that would become a significant distraction for you to be concerned about your financial situation?
Absolutely.
All right. And again, counsel, this one didn't have an indication here in the questionnaire, but that's why we bring jurors back. So I'd like to have a little more voir dire from state and the defense to make a determination, beginning with the state.
Your Honor, the state did not have the note of hardship. We did intend to talk about some other things, but given that information today, I think the state would simply make a motion to excuse this juror for cause based on hardship.
All right, Mr. Pryor, response for the defense.
Judge, I'm inclined to agree with the state, but if the court would like me to elaborate a little bit about the level of that hardship, I would, but I think given the circumstances, I'd stipulate. I'll defer to the court. If the court wants, before I elaborate some more, that would be fine, but given the statement, I feel that stretch of worrying about having a home to live in is significant enough for me, sir.
Okay. Juror 899, I guess I'll just follow up briefly. You indicated you thought this might put your housing situation in peril if your husband's job ended and you were not available to help support family financially. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Based on that concern, I do think that would pose a significant distraction for you during the course of the trial and a potential financial hardship. So the court is going to accept your representations on that issue and allow juror 899 to be excused based on a motion to strike from the state without objection from the defense. So thank you for coming in last week, filling out your questionnaire, and returning today. You can be excused with the thanks of the court. Please drop your questionnaire off to the bailiff. Next, talk to juror number 923. All right, juror number 923, you've expressed a concern in your questionnaire about both being a student and working. Could you elaborate on why this would create a hardship for you?
Yes. My class will probably go into mid-May, and I'm in mode. We're not able to focus on those. And then I do work full-time as well, and balancing the students would be kind of hard. And then if I was able to work, I'm going to probably lose my department.
Have you discussed your potential service with your employer?
It's made an intention pays for the time. I can ask about that. They didn't say anything about it, so I don't think that I would, or they wouldn't.
All right, does the state wish to follow up before Dyer?
Your Honor, the state actually already had a note here as well on hardship. We had noted that she indicated she was a full-time student and that she worked full-time. I think given that additional information, just going off what we know today, it sounds like she would not be compensated for her missed work time. I think all three of those things together would create a hardship. So the state would make a motion to excuse juror 923 for cause based on hardship.
All right, Mr. Pryor asked juror 923.
Judge, I was also going to request that the court excuse 923 hardship as well.
All right, juror 923, then the court will sustain the strike raised by the state and agreed to by the defense, allowing you to be excused for hardship. Thank you for completing your questionnaire and returning today. Please drop your questionnaire off with the bailiff on your way out. Next, talk to juror number 924. In your questionnaire, you stated, I have work out of town. You didn't have any other detail. Could you describe what type of work that is, when that would be out of town, and how it would impact you if you were doing trial?
I'm a musician, so I travel to other towns to play music. The work isn't always set. It kind of comes in as I go. So, like, in a month from now, I don't exactly know where I'll be put at. Generally, the work is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that just makes it impossible for me to reach out.
And is that your sole source of income?
Yeah, my wife and I are together, and we kind of share our incomes. So it is my sole source, though, yes.
Inquiry from the state.
Your Honor, we also have, had noticed that hardship of having to work out of town and had planned on following up. Given the additional information today, the state does believe that this would pose a hardship for juror 924 and would make a motion that he be excused for cause based on that.
All right, from the defense, Mr. Pryor.
Judge, I also had a note to excuse this juror for hardship based on the fact that he has to make a living traveling outside of town, and I think that's a significant hardship to have to try to make a living and perform jury service while he's also trying to travel out of town to attempt to make a living. So I would excuse.
All right, court's considered the challenge there, given that that is your sole occupation and source of income. The court will sustain the challenge 924 as excuse for hardship. So thank you for completing your questionnaire and returning. You can drop that off with the bailiff on your way. All right, juror number 937. Thank you. You put quite a bit of detail in here in terms of what was going on with scheduled medical appointments, et cetera. I reviewed that. It is a concern about a hardship. Are these appointments that could possibly be rescheduled, or would that be too difficult?
No, they could not be. Most of these appointments were scheduled months ago. One of the ones I get are Botox shot for migraines, and I don't schedule that the day I get them, I wouldn't get another one in 3 months. It's when my next shot's due in May, and scheduled the last time I got them.
Okay, and those are specifically for management of migraine headache pain?
Yeah. And I still get that, so it makes them less frequent, less severe. So some of it's medical appointments. I'm a single mom widow, and I have to take my minor daughter to a couple of doctor's appointments as well. So I'm the only parent that can attend an appointment like that. I usually work little bits of time, often out of state because of a long story. Anyways, but I am getting short on money, and I may very well need to take another short-term job before we're planning on moving to Oregon, because I may run out of money and not be able to pay the bills. So I can't do that if I'm working to trial for 8 to 10 weeks.
All right. I appreciate your explanation from the state in follow-up regard.
Thank you, Your Honor. We also had marked down to talk further with Juror 937 about the listed hardships. I think the court already went over the questions with regard to rescheduling and that kind of information. Given everything from Juror 937, the state would make a motion to remove her for cause for hardship.
All right. From the defense.
Judge, I concur in that motion. I had her marked as
All right, juror 937, thank you for your service in completing the questionnaire. I'll sustain the motion of the state without objection of the defense that you stated a sufficient rationale for a hardship preventing your service in this case, given the length of the trial. So juror 937 may be excused. Please drop your questionnaire off with the bailiff on your way. Next, talk to juror 1004. All right, raise your card, please.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. In this case, you didn't indicate anything in the questionnaire. Would you please explain what's going on that would create a hardship at this point?
Yes, Your Honor. As far as employment goes, I'd be able to retain that. And I'd be basically the FMLA and a protected pay. So it'd be coming out of my pay account or my time I've built up. It would require additional staffing to be called in to fill my position due to the nature of my job. The additional issue would be with child care and the cost of child care. My wife's current job that she'd be getting soon would be essentially a 9 to 5 every week for the foreseeable future. And if I was required to attend here, I'd have to provide child care for my 3-year-old and then also for my 12-year-old, and my 15-year-old is currently employed, and I help with his mom to take him to and from his current employment as well. So being unavailable to be there for that would create significant issues, again, with child cost to even find child care for them. And also, I'm sure their mom would take issue with me not being able to take them on the days that's currently scheduled for me to have them.
All right. You're currently a police officer. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And are you saying that your department won't, or your employer won't cover jury service?
So I believe they will. I'm not clear. I've discussed with them the potential of needing to be here. I'm a little unclear, and that's entirely on me as far as exactly how that pay would go. I certainly would be compensated and certainly wouldn't lose my employment. But due to minimum staffing requirements for our department, if I wasn't available, there would be frequently days where other members would have to be called in on their days off to fill my position.
Okay, thank you for the explanations from the state and Gordar.
Your Honor, I just would like to clarify. I think I understood correctly. The concern sounds like when your wife's at work, you provide the child care.
So I will clarify. So my current wife is the one that's beginning a new job. Her and I have my 3-year-old daughter together. My ex-wife is the one I have my 15-year-old and 12-year-old with. We have a custody schedule. And I would get them for, part of the week, and she gets them for the other part of the week. So if I was unavailable, per the agreement, she would be the first one I'd have to ask to cover for that. If she was unavailable, then it would be a child care issue trying to find care for them. Not so much for my 15-year-old, but getting him to and from his place of employment so he didn't lose his job and just began as well. So it'd be a custody potential issue if she wanted to make it, which wouldn't be surprised if she did. But then for my current wife, it would be just the cost of finding constant daily long-term care for my 3-year-old.
Because when your current wife starts her new job, you would be providing the child care for the 3-year-old at times at least?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that. And you do not have child care already set up or anyone in place?
So we do have someone in place. I'm not sure if she's going to be able to fulfill every single day of the week during the normal work week. Right now, due to the way our schedules work, she watches my daughter. There's only a couple days a week that we need coverage just because we've adjusted our schedules to where we actually work opposite sides of the week. And there's only a day or two here and there where we actually need coverage. Other than that, we just switch off with those duties.
Thank you for that additional explanation. I just wanted to make sure I understood correctly. Judge, given all of that, I think it does rise to the level of a hardship, and the state would make a motion to exclude your 1004.
Mr. Pryor.
Judge, I'd also agree that 004 needs to be excused. As a lawyer, I'm well aware of the difficulties when there are ex-wives, the trying to navigate through custody and the impact actually on your two teenage children. That has to be taken into consideration, along with the fact that the financial burden of having to provide additional child care to your children. I think it's necessary that you be excused. I don't know that we should force him back to earn that kind of burden.
All right, I'm considering this one. Juror 1004, in your questionnaire, you indicated that your current wife is also a police officer. Is that correct?
That is correct, Juror.
All right, having considered the challenge here, the court is going to deny the challenge to strike. I don't find that there's a for cause hardship represented by this prospective juror rising to the level that they would be unable to serve in this case. While I understand that maybe hugely inconvenient if the trial really goes as long as we've scheduled, it's an inconvenience for anyone required to sit for that length of time. And based on that, juror number 1004 will remain in for further individual questioning or group questioning. All right, the next hardship issue raised was by juror number 1032. All right, thank you. All right, this juror's requested a hardship excuse in the questionnaire talking about employee training and employment issues, and also issues with tending to children, including a special ed child. So would you please describe to the court in a little more detail about how this may impact your employment as well as your family issues involving your children?
Yes, so as far as the employment, I verify that I will get paid for at least 6 weeks. We're still rolling out the chain to make sure that it would go to 8 to 10 weeks. So I'm pretty confident that I would get paid. The inconvenience and hardship would be more family related. My wife and I are the sole providers here. We have no family, no caretakers. I'm the one who makes breakfast, gets her girls ready. She has to leave the house by 6:45. She's a special ed teacher. To clarify, our kids are not special ed. She's a special ed teacher. For example, the past week when I had to come for jury duty and today, she has to show up to work 3 hours late. It's kind of a ripple effect on her. Our schedules, the pickup schedules to the 6 and 3 year old that we have. To add icing to that cake recently, We just had a family diagnosis of cancer, stage 4, which is out of state, and we've been trying to monitor it. Hopefully it doesn't turn into the worst case scenario, but she may have to travel, depending on the circumstances, in the next 4 or 6 weeks. We hope it doesn't get to that level, but there is a possibility that she may travel, and if she travels, that kind of leaves me in limbo with the kids. Kind of uncertain.
All right, thank you for that explanation. Let me go on to the state then and ask the state if they have any voir dire on the hardship request.
Judge, the state does not have any questions at this time.
All right, Mr. Pryor.
Sir, all of these things, the thought of, I'm sorry about the cancer diagnosis, I really am. All of these things that you just talked about are going to be distractions for you. That'd be fair.
I think that's fair.
And these distractions, are they going to be in any way impact your ability to listen to the testimony and make a fair and impartial ruling? In this case, is this going to be something that you're going to be thinking about and not focusing on the significant importance of this case?
I think that's safe to say my mind will be wandering on other things, yes.
Judge, based on that, I'm going to move to excuse this juror for cause.
All right, based on those further responses from the state, a response to the motion to strike.
Your Honor, the state has no objection.
All right, given those previous responses, juror number 1032, the court is going to find that service in this case would constitute a hardship, disallowing your service. So I'll sustain that defense motion to strike. And you can be excused with the thanks of the court. Please return your questionnaire to the bailiff on the way out. I believe that concludes discussion of hardship with this group of jurors. And thank you all who are remaining here at this time. The next matter we'll go into.
We approach just briefly.
Yes. All right, we're back on the record. I had a brief sidebar with counsel. On the issue of hardship, we had one other juror that we just wanted to talk to about that, juror 752. Thank you. You did indicate in your questionnaire you believe you had a hardship. We didn't discuss that. I don't see that you raised your card. It was work-related issues. Do you have anything to indicate on that, or have you resolved any potential hardship, and would you be able to serve given the timing?
So I am currently the CFO of the entity that I'm at, and I know everybody has time commitments, hardship, and stuff. I do have a stay-at-home wife. I have spoken to the CEO of the company to let him know. We're trying to figure out backup plans. I didn't feel we could potentially work around it, but if I get sequestered, that becomes issues around month end, quarter end. Those are always tough times, but I just feel like everybody has those commitments, work commitments. I didn't want to make it a bigger deal just because that I've been different.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. With that in mind, then, you do believe you, if required to serve here, would be able to do it and give this your full time and attention if that was the requirement and you were selected?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you for your responses on that. With that, if counsel has any further questions, I'll just allow that in the section of voir dire, and we'll pass over remaining four hardship questions and move on. The next matter we're going to discuss relates to your potential knowledge of the case. You have heard a summary of the charges made in the amended indictment. Other than what I have told you, do you know anything about this case, either through your own personal knowledge, by discussion with anyone else, from anything you've read or seen in the internet, newspaper, television, radio, noting this is a highly publicized case, so many jurors have heard of the case, and if you have, we will discuss that, and again, the details of that will be discussed individually with you, so don't bring up any facts, but if of these remaining jurors, if you have knowledge of this case, meaning more than just what you heard described by the court, would you please raise your red cards now? Okay, so we've got most of the jurors here, and if you'll keep those up for a minute, I'll get these all noted as well as counsel. Okay, Thank you. We are going to move on. We'll note that and discuss that information with you individually as you're brought back in once we put the group questioning here. Next issue I want to bring up is as it relates to the charges in this case. I've read to you more than once now what the charges are, but this case has charges involving murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud. Is there anything about just the nature of those charges or the subject matter of the case that would make it impossible or difficult for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case and render a fair and impartial verdict? Okay, no one affirmatively answered that. I'm going to next ask some questions that might seem very obvious based on your questionnaires, but I'm required to go through these on some Idaho statutory authority to make sure there's no connection between you and any participants of this case. So next question, are any of you related by blood or marriage to the defendant, or do you know him, Mr. Daybell, from any kind of business or social relationship? All right, no one answered yes. I'll next ask about any legal relationship you may have with participants here. Does the relationship of guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor and debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger exist between any of you and any of the attorneys here today? No one affirmatively answered that. Are any of you a party in any civil action, civil lawsuit against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? No response to that. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against Mr. Daybell or been accused of a crime by any of the four prosecuting attorneys that are here present today? No one responded to that. Do any of you have any kind of an attorney-client relationship, previous or current, with Mr. Pryor or his law firm? No one responded to that. Do any of you believe you've already formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or not guilty of the offense charged? And if so, please raise your red card if you already have an opinion of guilt. All right, we've got one, juror 1057. And we will discuss that with you individually, 1004 and 951. And then we'll discuss that with you individually. Somewhat related here, do any of you have any bias or prejudice either for or against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? No response to that. Are any of you unwilling to follow the court's instructions to you as the jury as to the law that you must apply in determining this case? No one responded to that. Do any of you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible for you to sit in judgment of another or to render a fair and impartial verdict? No one responded to that, and I'll note we will ask you further questions individually that may cover that topic as it relates to the state's notice of intent to seek death penalty in this case. Are any of you, as selected as a juror in this case, unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law as instructed by the court? All right, no one said yes to that. A final catch-all question here. Do any of you have any other reason why you could not give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? No one answered that question either. At this time, then, that concludes the court's portion of voir dire. I'll now allow the state to have its voir dire followed by the defense, who's going to be doing voir dire for this group today.
I will be, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Ms. Blake. If you'd like to go ahead and question the jurors, you may do so.
Thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being back here this morning. I know this one's been a bit of a longer process, and you were all here last week to fill out some questionnaires. So we appreciate you hanging in there with us while we go through this. The reason that we go through this whole process is we want to do our best to ensure that both the defendant, Chad Daybell, and the state get a fair trial. And so as we go through questions today, that's what we're looking at. That's why we're asking you questions. So as we go through this, I don't mean to put anyone on the hot spot or in the hot seat. So I hope no one feels that way, but we may ask you some questions as we go through this. If I use the term brutal honesty, what comes to mind? Juror 1048. What, if I use the term brutal honesty, what does that make you think of?
It makes me think of just telling the absolute truth. No falsehoods, no lies, just straight facts and straight truth.
Thank you. And juror 909?
Just that you would be completely honest regardless of how it might make the other person feel.
Thank you for that. And the reason I bring that up is as you sit here today and answer these questions, we're going to ask you to be brutally honest. And so it's part of the process today. And then if selected as a juror, at some point you're going to go back with your fellow jurors when the court instruction says you can start talking about the evidence and what you've heard, and you're going to start having discussions. And we want to make sure that anyone here can be brutally honest both today through this process and also when you go back into that group setting, that you can be brutally honest with each other and speak up. So that's why we talk about that. And I don't know if any of you know, to me, when I think of brutal honesty, my niece, one of my nieces comes to mind. So she was my first niece. And as this little girl, I quickly learned if I wanted to know the truth about something, I could go to her. If I wanted to really know how my hair looked that day or how an outfit looked, she did not hold back. She let me know. And I think we probably all know somebody like that, that whether it's a little kid or the filter, and I don't know if all of you know someone like that that's kind of your go-to to get that straight answer. And you're 1057. I think I saw you nod at one point. Do you have someone like that in your life that will just give you that straight answer? The judge talk to you about the subject matter of this case, and we didn't have anyone raise their hand that they couldn't sit on this. As you're aware, this case does deal with several counts of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, as well as several counts of first-degree murder. There was a question on that questionnaire. Some of the images that you may see in this case may be graphic. They may be disturbing. It's normal and it's fine to be disturbed by these images. But I just want to check, is there anybody on the panel today that would, that have seen images of, say, children, and maybe not the best images, graphic images, disturbing images? Is that going to cause anyone here concern that they couldn't be fair and impart? Juror 1057, let's talk a little bit about that.
It wasn't children, but my brother-in-law caught on fire and I put him out. And it's been a long time, and I, after filling out this and being here, more of those thoughts come to my mind.
Of what you saw that day?
Yeah. And smelled.
So in your mind, if you were, and that's a fair answer, and so not trying to put you on the hot spot, but just asking a few more questions. For you, if you were to see images, would you be able to set aside any thoughts of your brother-in-law and be able to just look at the images and give them the weight you think they're due in relation to any other evidence presented?
I think I could.
Do you think it would be so upsetting that it would cause you any kind of physical or mental anguish to the point that you couldn't be fair and impartial?
I don't know if I can honestly answer that, but I do know that I've been having trouble sleeping.
And when you say trouble sleeping, did that start, do you mean since you've been selected to potentially be a juror?
Yes.
And do you feel that's impacting your life in such a way that it would affect your ability to sit as a juror in this case?
I would hope not.
Thank you for your honesty. When I talk about brutal honesty, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Has everyone here flown on a plane before? I see. I think everyone nodded yes. So when you get on the plane, you probably recall at some point they kind of tell you, hey, sit back or lay back, enjoy the flight. We're going to arrive at our destination at such and such time. If instead of getting that announcement, the pilot told you, hey, so I'm going to try to land the plane. I think we'll get there at this time, and hopefully we land. Would you feel comfortable staying on that plane? I see A few people didn't respond completely. I saw a lot of shaking of the head. Juror 752, would you feel comfortable staying on that plane?
Not knowing, I mean, I like to know where I'm going, and if there's uncertainty, I'm going to be questioning it, you know, trying to see if it gets some answers. Mm-hmm. I don't like just sitting there blindly and just falling. I'd like to see what's going on.
And I appreciate that. Juror 922, how about you?
I prefer my pilot to be competent and confident, I would say.
And I think those are both very fair answers. So if you have the choice and you could get on a plane where the pilot says, I can for sure land this plane, and the other plane, the pilot says, I might be able to land it, which plane are you getting on? And I'll ask juror 951, which plane would you get on out of those two?
The pilot being confident of getting to our destination.
And I know that might seem like an odd analogy, but when we ask you to sit here, and this goes back to the brutal honesty, because the defendant, Chad Daigle, is entitled to a fair trial, as is the state, we want to make sure that we have jurors that can say, you know what, I can sit here, I can weigh the evidence, I can be fair and impartial, and essentially I can land this plane. I can do what's being asked of me. And so as we go through these questions too, we want you thinking of that. Can you be keep an open mind and weigh the evidence and give it the weight that it's due? Because that would be your job as the jurors here. So I have a little boy, and in the mornings when he wakes up, if I ask him, what do you want for breakfast? 9 times out of 10, it's cheesy eggs. But his cheesy eggs are made a certain way. We have to do the eggs, we have the cheese, we have the milk, and we have the salt and pepper. And honestly, he likes extra cheese. So that's his recipe for the cheesy eggs that he wants me to make. And if I vary it, he's not necessarily happy. But do any of you have that experience where, whether it's a kid or someone in your life, there's some kind of a recipe that they like made just a certain way? That's just how they like it. And your 1004, have you had that experience?
Definitely similar with having three kids now and getting older. But yeah, my three-year-old, she definitely, she really just about anything, but she's very particular about certain things. So yeah, really.
And your 909, how about you?
Mainly with kids, but I don't know that I ever had anybody that was super specific. It was either I don't want a kid or do you like it?
Or I like it. And if you're around someone like that and you're given this recipe, I think sometimes it's easy to say, you know, if I changed it this way, if I added this, or if I took this out, or I made it just a little bit different, it would make more sense, or I would like it better. When you're sitting here today, and the judge did give you one jury instruction today, if you're selected, you're going to hear a lot of jury instructions as you go through this. And some of those jury instructions are also going to be instructions that contain the elements of the crime. So kind of like a recipe, the judge is going to lay out, the state has to prove these specific things. The state doesn't have to prove these other things, and the state has to prove all of them. And sometimes it's easy to look at those and think, well, this doesn't make a lot of sense. Why don't they have to prove this? Or maybe they shouldn't have to prove this. But we have to make sure that you can follow that recipe or that jury instruction as given by the judge. Does anyone have concerns that you wouldn't be able to follow the instructions given by the judge, or that you'd be tempted to modify it? Anyone have that concern at all? Okay, I don't see anyone saying they have that concern. So with those, when we talk about the recipe and the instructions, as I said, the judge will lay out the elements. And sometimes it might not require an ingredient or an element that you think we should have to prove. When you're dealing with first degree, you would get a jury instruction, and it'll come from the court, but it will essentially talk about an individual had to be part of causing the death. But one of the elements isn't going to be that we have to prove the actual cause. So essentially, we have to prove that they were part of it or that they committed the murder, but we don't have to prove how they went about it. Does anyone have concerns with that, with following the court's instruction on that? So if the state was able to meet the burden of proving that they did it or they were part of it, of the murder, would anyone have concerns if the state didn't prove the actual cause of the murder, if that's not one of the ingredients? I don't see anyone saying yes to that.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daigle. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.